How's it going out there? Welcome back. It's another Tuesday. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And you're in fact listening to the one and only Carolyn and Joe show. Hey, Carolyn, how you doing?
I'm feeling soft and fluffy.
Soft and fluffy. I thought that might be a pretty awesome show or song to start with. Is Zooey Deschanel singing, what is that?
The cotton theme.
Yes, the cotton theme. Is that selling out? I'm not quite sure.
Well, it's a free advertisement for cotton.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
She was definitely part of that. And guess what, Carolyn? We have a brand new person on the show. Never
a
before.
A person that has never before been heard on the Carolyn and Joe show.
Fresh. Devirginalized on the
just
show.
Just like cotton.
Yes.
Yes.
It is Calvin.
Calvin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Are we calling you Calvin on this one? Are we calling you Jay?
Are we calling you Calvin Jameson Jay? I don't know what you should call me. You've always called me Calvin, so I guess you call me Calvin. I also go by Jay, but it's spelled with an I, so it's weird.
As opposed to a Y.
I don't know.
And that always surprised me because you do, like, I remember when you, I guess when you move, because you're moving pretty soon to the New York area. Are you going to change your name again?
Well, that's the weird thing, because it's like, all right. So,
how would you like to be known as?
I don't know anymore. I really don't. It's like I have this identity crisis thing.
How about
like,
the name Cotton?
Yes, I'm going to start going by Cotton.
Gotta like poof your hair out.
Because, I'm gonna poof my hair out. I'm gonna color it white.
So for the people out there, people at home who are listening to this in their car or whatever, Calvin is black.
Yes.
But now we bring in the cotton reference.
But he also has for as long as I've known Calvin. He's a filmmaker. But also another cool trait is he has like, I guess your hair is long, but it's also poofy long.
It's
Who can we compare it to on the?
Well, a lot of people say I look like Joakim Noah.
Oh, really?
He's a basketball player for the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, there you go.
He's got really long hair. Also, who else do I look like? Travie McCoy from Gym Class Heroes. I get that a lot. I occasionally get Lionel Richie.
What? I guess,
hey man,
I do.
I can
see that a little bit now.
Yeah,
I can see that.
He could be like my long lost uncle or something. I don't know.
As you can tell, the news music is playing. So Carolyn, give us the news before we cut right into
it. All right. Well, first of all, the most important news is that if you're planning on advertising in Magic Bullet, Washington, D.C.'s comics newspaper, you still can. You have until March 1st. And I'm getting awesome advertisers in there. I don't want to announce them quite yet.
So people should really jump on it now.
But
they're going to miss out.
Honestly, you're going to definitely miss out if you don't want to advertise in Magic Bullet. You're going to, first of all, the print run is 5,000. We're going all over the East Coast comic scene. Plus, you get your ad seen in the newspapers in the DC area because we're going to be delivering them to lots of venues, restaurants.
And also, it goes coast to coast because we've seen it now, like in LA, we've seen it in New York, we've seen it pretty much anywhere.
It will pop up wherever it will be. Even it was on Amazon for like someone was selling it for like $15.
No, on eBay.
Was
right?
It eBay? Yeah, something eBay, Amazon, one of those reselling places.
That's what's amazing,
they're
Calvin. Selling is I've seen
a
that
previous issue for
people have been
bucks.
Bootlegging our stuff and selling. That's the first time I've seen that.
And I this mean, is a free newspaper.
That's the sign of success, man.
It says free right on it.
Yeah.
But that just shows you how rare it is. Plus, the previous issues of Magic Bullet have been included in the Library of Congress.
That's right.
Collection. So I mean, you're gonna be in history. I don't see why you should not advertise. So anyway, Google Magic Bullet Comics and you'll find the webpage and you'll find my contact information.
And
you will email me.
And I'll probably put a link to it too so people will be able to. There was a link on it last week and I see how people don't like to read. It's definitely there.
Yeah.
People don't like to read.
You'll find true. A way. Or you can email info@curls-studio.com and tell us that you listen to the Carolyn and Joe show.
Yeah.
And that you want to advertise in Magic Bullet number 6.
Exactly.
And we'll put you on board. Also, our first tour date of the year, March 30th, be at Asbury Comic Con.
Asbury Park at the Convention Center, right?
Wait, what did I just say?
Asbury, I don't know.
Asbury Park Comic Con. I was just so excited, I couldn't even get the full name out. Yes, we'll be at the Convention Center on the beach, near the sand, near the sunshine, near the Bikini Babes on March 30th, of course, because, you know, they're all out there already.
The Jersey Girls hanging out.
Yeah. I will be there.
With Snooki.
Nice.
Fist pumping.
Yes. Awesome. And on April 20th and 21st, we'll be at AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. in the Washington Convention Center.
First ever convention at the Washington Convention Center.
First ever.
Serious. It's serious this time.
Comic book convention at the Washington Convention Center. Yes, we will be there. And come meet Joe and I. We won't be recording a podcast that we know of.
Possibly. I'm working on it.
We don't know. It's all up in the air. But we will definitely be there. So join us there. There's other tour dates in the year. But for now, let's just stick to some spring dates. I don't want to get too far ahead.
Awesome Con! All right.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that in there.
Awesome Con DC, man. Pearl Studio Invasion.
Remember, I used to do that at Project Resolution, but now I can do that. I used to extend the end of the Project Resolution, like, extension. Now I can do the Carolyn and Joe Show! I can do that now. All
fancy.
Sound
like we're in outer space. We should record an episode where the whole time we sound like we're in outer space.
That would drive people nuts.
I want that effect on my voice.
You want to? Go for it.
Can you just isolate Calvin?
Oh, wait. Which one? I'm trying to figure out who's who. Oh, good.
This is Calvin. A.K.A. Cotton. That's awesome.
You basically got the Cotton nickname just because we played the Cotton theme song.
That's really I had nothing lined up between. I had like, nothing to do that. I was like, hey, Zooey Deschanel singing the Cotton theme song.
And then you were like, how do you feel, Carolyn? Yeah, and I was like, fresh and fluffy, like cotton. And then that's how your name
that's
kind of
That's how my
just,
new nickname
that's
came
how
about.
It came.
I mean,
but you know. How are you going to introduce like people you meet in New York? What are you going to say? My name is blank. What are you going to say?
It's weird because like my group of friends that I know in New York already all know me as Calvin, but since then I've started going by Jay. So like they.
So now you got to tell them to switch it over.
Well, that's the thing. Like I don't know if I can because they're like F you, man. Like we've known you for Calvin for 10 years. Like, I mean, I'm not going to switch it over.
Isn't that what happened to me?
That's exactly what happened.
I was like, I'm not going
to
call you Jay, even though. Other people were. I think I called you Jay like 3 times because I was like, "Well, everyone else is."
Yeah, but then someone else called me Calvin, and you were just like, "You took that as a sign." We're like, "Okay."
What does Cooney call you?
So, Cooney calls me Calvin.
I think I've always known you as Calvin.
Yeah,
but your sister calls you Jay, though, right?
She calls me Jay. So, like,
so
what
that's
it was
the right one then? Right?
The nickname came because I'm a junior. My dad's name is Calvin, so they had to find a way to differentiate me from him,
as opposed to saying junior.
Yeah,
or something. Are you a junior? Is that
I am a junior?
Oh, so that is an option, but I don't know if you want that.
No, I'd rather not be called junior.
Yeah,
I'd rather be junior. Yeah, I'd rather be called Cotton than junior. That's
well, that's saying a lot.
Someone's gonna mix it together.
Yeah.
Cotton Junior.
That's definitely my new name.
So welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Very glad to be here.
It's always great to have like another filmmaker on here. And you know, very very few times we can shoot. You know, like shoot like film wise. So I guess the first question I would ask you, since I don't usually ask you people questions, but. You know, how is it to feel to be a filmmaker in today's day and age that a lot of people, you know, don't know?
It's interesting because it's like
I do know we're playing the Fighting Forcer soundtrack in the background because I remember before we made one of our first films together. It was the night of, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, Joe, we need to watch some. And I was like, what do we need to watch? And you popped in Fighting Forcer. I was like, what? Why are we watching? Nothing against Fighting Forrester. But you were just like, this is what I watched to get into the filmmaking mood. You know, I saw you like just zone up and just get ready. And like in my head, I was like, I guess this makes sense. Because did I tell you that one of my favorite films and one of the films that got me into making films was Good Will Hunting.
Oh, okay.
And those are two side-by-side films.
They are.
Who directed Finding Forrester?
Gus Van Sant.
Did he?
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't know he did that one too.
Yes.
I guess it was.
It's the same movie, basically.
Is there a reason why you chose?
Well, Finding Forrester was when I first got into filmmaking, which was I was like a 16-year-old kid. I wanted to be a writer. And then I went and saw Finding Forrester around the same time that I went to the Southern Mystique Film Camp at New Millennium Studios. And like it was kind of the combination of like being exposed to filmmaking as a technique and as a way of storytelling. And then seeing Finding Forrester and really identifying with that character that made me say, this is what I want to do. Yeah. So it's basically the movie that made me want to make movies.
Awesome.
And I mean, it's ridiculously flawed. It's terribly flawed.
Wait, tell me how it's flawed. I've watched it a whole bunch.
Yeah.
But like, I don't really go into it being like, no, it's flawed. I can't look at it being flawed. Carolyn, have you seen Finding Forrester?
I remember I saw most of it in the theater.
This is the
Now, did we see the full movie in the theater?
We did see...
I think we saw most of it.
We saw most of it. This is a time where we... Yeah, we theater hopped.
So. Well, also, I'm not gonna lie, like, it's looking back on it, I think it's a terrible thing to do, but we were like 16 or 17 and didn't know any better. And,
wait, what? No, we weren't. Oh,
yeah,
I was,
we were.
I was not.
Well, either way, I'm just saying I was very young. I didn't like really think about those things, but yeah. Now I was. Now I'm like, I have to be a like upright citizens brigade. You know, like
I
cannot ever like do anything wrong. You know,
yeah.
Like I adhere to the law. You know.
Yeah.
But when you're young, like we were definitely still teenagers, and we did do that.
but you've seen Finding Fort.
But yeah,
you
I
remember,
saw most of it.
Remember, there's that scene where the two people, well, I guess, to decide a disagreement, they got punished and they had to shoot free throws.
Yeah.
And then whoever lost, I forget what happens. I should remember that.
It was whoever missed first had to, like, run laps or something.
Oh, yeah, and they, like, didn't miss any?
Neither one missed ever. Like, they just kept making them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
So you saw that movie?
Yes.
In the theater?
I saw it in the theater at the old Willow Lawn... At the old Willow Lawn Theater that's now a Gold's Gym.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Memories. That theater? Yes, yes. And I went with my uncle to see it, and it's just, like I said, it just changed my life. And, like, looking back, I can see that it was, like I said before, flawed.
But how is it? I really want to know how
okay.
It's flawed. In your
I
perspective,
saw
how it's flawed.
A C-stand at 4570.
Is it that type of flaw?
No,
or is it, like, because, like, you're like, Sean Connery would never be in this movie.
Structural. There's some, like, well, for one, there's the whole idea of, like, he's got this relationship with Anna Paquin. That's kind of touched on, but they don't really go into it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that.
It's like they've got this flirtation, and then for the whole third act of the movie, they just don't talk about it again. It's like, so what happens?
Just like, forget about that.
Exactly. They're like,
she went to go on X-Men halfway in the movie.
Exactly. They're like, let's create some racial tension with this interracial relationship,
yeah.
And then we don't need that anymore, so we're going to continue on with the movie. And then, of course, it has one of the worst lines in the history of cinema.
What's that?
That spawned a website and everything. Sean Connery's "You the Man Now, Dog."
Oh, God.
It's just,
Sean Connery decides to retire after that.
Exactly. I mean, he pretty much did. I think that was his last movie, or close to it. One of his last three.
Wait, no,
three.
He did.
Did he do "League of Extraordinary Gentlemen" after that?
And then that was the final nail in the coffin.
That was the final nail in the coffin.
I remember him.
He's like,
having some
he's
bad
like, damn it, damn it.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but yeah, no, I mean, other than that, though, it's a great film. Really
is that the real, is that the main reason why it was flawed? Because of the Anna Paquin?
It was the
They
Anna
could have
Paquin
taken it
thing.
Further.
They could have taken it further. I think they could have gotten more into that.
I don't even know what, I'm trying to remember what the third act, for some reason, when I think back towards Finding Forrester now, I really always go towards the end, like the very end, like before the credits end, where you just have Sean Connery riding his bike.
Riding on a bicycle?
I'm like, what? Why are we watching this? What? I mean, why is this? Did Gus not want to delete this? Is this one of his moments where
freedom.
He's like...
It's the freedom.
What if the end of him was basically him riding on the bike like Antoine Chigurh style?
Wait, what? In what? In the...
Remember in No Country for Old Men?
Oh, yeah, and
how
he got hit by a car.
What
you're
if
like, damn, there you
like
go.
That.
That's how you end that movie?
Exactly.
Just Antoine Chigurh that shit.
Find him now. Find him, Forrester.
He is on this bus now.
Yeah, I did have a good... But like when we were watching that, I was like, yeah, this makes complete sense. I was like, this is cool for, you know, because that sort of connected. I remember Busta Rhymes was in that movie, and I was like, holy crap, it's Busta Rhymes using his actual Busta Rhymes credit name.
Yes.
That's like
yes.
The celebrity influence of that movie.
That is.
They're like,
is.
We have to have him in there.
It gives the movie street cred.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Busta Rhymes.
So did you, so after you graduated, did you teach? I'm not sure if you taught or if you just were, you went right into production.
I taught a little bit. I've taught some smaller courses. And when I was in grad school, I TA'd classes and I taught lessons and classes. But I haven't been like a full-time teacher at any point, no.
I'm just checking on that because there's always that sort of, I don't know, sometimes there's that mentality of like, when you're a teacher, you know, every film that you watch, it's almost like you have to make it as if you're the god watching it. Like, all the, you know, you say, like, what are the most important films that you must say? And there's always, like, Kubrick, you must be do that. Is there a bunch of films that, like, if when you were teaching that you're like, I swear by these directors, you must go watch it? And I feel like from your perspective, since you come from that Finding Forrester background, were there, was that one of the films that you wanted to say, like, you need to watch Finding Forrester? Or were you like, no, I need to, you know, you need to watch Kurosawa or something like that?
No, actually, Finding Forrester was the film that I used in my lesson plan. Mostly because I knew it well and I would use certain scenes from it.
Yeah.
Like I said, the film overall has its, but there are scenes and there are bits of the tone that I think they students could learn a lot from. And particularly, I taught a course at VCU that was for...
Really? I didn't know you taught at VCU.
I taught... It was a summer camp for underprivileged 13 to 15-year-old black boys,
yeah,
to teach them visual, like, film and visual production and all that to help them get a voice to tell their stories and do documentaries and all of that. And I used Finding Forrester for that because I felt that when I was around their age, could relate to that character. So then I showed them Finding, because none of them had seen Finding Forrester.
So did you show, like, the whole movie?
I showed the whole movie. No, I showed the whole movie for that. I started off just showing the beginning, and they got really engaged in it. So, like, over the course of maybe 3 or 4 classes, I would show parts of the movie, then I'd teach some, and then I would, you know, the next day I would show some more of the movie. And they were just, they really, really loved the film, and they really, and it was one of those things where it was like, I saw them, the key was the exposure.
Yeah.
Like, exposing them to something that they hadn't seen before, and you could see their minds expanding and,
yeah,
saying, oh, wow, this is, and as I was breaking down the film and the scenes, they were starting to understand. So I thought that was very powerful and, you know, a great experience overall.
I think that's always that's a cool, like, response for when you are teaching to get that feedback.
Absolutely.
And I remember, like, were there other films that you had your list? Because I know when I taught, like, for the Summer Mystique Film Camp, I had those lists of scenes I wanted to show. What were the ones that you were like, all right, if you're gonna make movies,
yeah,
through my filter, exactly, what are the movies you're gonna what were the scenes that you showed?
Well, when I teach on the more advanced level, like college students or high school students,
are they, would you count that advanced level, or are you just like, oh, it's just schooling?
I would say it's more advanced than the original 13 year old, 15 year old.
So you're not saying advanced by it, just like what grade they're in, not advanced by, like, level of filmmaking?
Yes, no, advanced in just in terms of, like, just their understanding of the world in general.
Yeah.
What I like to teach is I like to look at intertextuality within film,
yeah,
and, like, meta and structure and all of that, and looking at, like, meta structure and stuff like that. So I'll use examples like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
yeah,
which is one of my favorite films as well, and the way the narrator works in that, and I'll show a scene and saying this is how he uses the narrator in a good way as an unreliable narrator in this scene, because you don't know if he's telling the truth because he has a perspective of his own.
So yeah.
It makes them, I look at ways to have them, to have the students question and start really questioning what they're seeing on the screen and breaking it down themselves. Who else do I do? Billy Wilder.
Of course. And it's surprising. There's not a lot of, I feel like with a mainstream audience, they don't know a Billy Wilder at this point on.
They don't.
But I'm like, well, if you've seen the Cameron Crowe, Cameron Crowe Breaches in Today, it all comes back to Billy Wilder.
It all comes back to Billy Wilder. I feel like it's weird because I feel like, in this weird way, Billy Wilder and Hitchcock were kind of contemporaries in the sense of, like, the type of being auteurs and making a certain style of movie.
And also in the studio system, too.
Within the studio system. And Hitchcock is the one that gets studied the most. But if you look at what Billy Wilder did, he's one of the prototypes for the writer-director that,
yeah,
we have today. You know, like, in Hitchcock is more of a prototype of just the straight-up director, and producer-director. So when you're talking about to students about the writer-director today, you got to go to Billy Wilder.
You do.
He was just...
Especially at the beginning.
At the beginning, yeah.
I mean, you even got, you know, Orson Welles, Billy Wilder, like, right in the beginning of the noir, then, right, you know, even the romance comedy is directly in that.
Exactly. And that's the other thing about Billy Wilder, is that he was able to jump through so many genres. He was so flexible as a filmmaker that he could go from a noir to a romantic comedy to an over-the-top sex comedy.
Yeah.
And it all worked, and it was all his voice.
And I think that's pretty much why it's challenging for a lot of people. When you look back at, like, because even with Joss Whedon these days, you look back at Joss Whedon, and since he's done so much, it's tough just, and he's such a, I guess, like a genre destroyer at this point, that you're like, oh yeah, he just does comedy, or he just did this, because no, he just basically just, you know, does the medium.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the same thing with Billy Wilder. He was able, he's tough for the modern audience just to put their finger on, because his finger's on everything.
Exactly.
But to me, whenever I want to show people anything Billy Wilder, I'm just like, well, name a classic Hollywood icon. And they'll be like, Audrey Hepburn. Like, well, boom. Sabrina.
Yeah.
Star back then. Look, Marilyn Monroe. Boom. 7 year inch or Some Like It Hot. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, what about Shirley MacLaine? And they're like, I don't know who Shirley MacLaine is. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me?
The apartment.
Was born in Richmond, too. It's one of those things.
Exactly.
She's still alive, too.
Yeah, she's still alive.
Oh, you should work with
her. On TV. I think she's like on Always Sunny or something like that.
Is she?
I forget.
I just saw her in a great film, Bernie, with Jack Black. It was, again, just saw this the other day. It was Richard Linklater. And it was based on a true story. And he took interviews and he made it kind of like a faux documentary. And Shirley MacLaine was one of the actresses in it. And she was fantastic.
Yeah.
Even now, like, she's still killing it.
Now, I guess then you've always been sort of like, you've been making films. I always remember, for some reason, one of the films that always sticks in my mind, several things from your work sticks in my head. One is Muppets. You like to work with Muppets, and there's also, you did a short film, I think it was even one of the earlier ones, where it was something about injecting flavor, and you had like an insulin needle or something like that.
These are like
way back ones. This is when we first met style, because remember I was, you know, doing Project Res, I saw like a million films. I feel like doing Project Resolution.
Explain to people what Project Res is, because this is the second reference.
Well, basically, Project Resolution, if people don't know me already, I should reference this a million times. I don't even know if there's anything like this going on today. But in Richmond, Virginia, me and Kevin Gallagher had a monthly film festival in which each film is open to critique. And we had it every single month, and I forget how long it ran, maybe 4 years or 3 to 4 years, but that's a lot of. But basically, like, we'd watch, like, and this was like a film festival that we almost pretty much blindly curated every single month. So every single month, we'd probably have a film festival showcasing about 15 or sometimes under 20 films. So now it's like our palette is so filled, and it's also, you see so many films that I feel like we've lived such a film life mindset. You know how it's like...
They were shorts, too.
They were shorts. So you see, you get, you know, it's like a whole day of movie anthologies, basically.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like looking back at it now, the experience has not jaded me, but it's made me feel like, wow, I've lived a fuller film festival life.
Yeah.
Because now doing that, I feel like I've put shows together, film festivals together, and I'm like, oh, I know how that works. I know why this film is showing. I know why that, because we did it too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We pulled those politics too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I first met you. We even have photos of ourselves together, and that's how I saw those films.
Yeah.
And I remember even like Todd Raviota being like, this is Calvin. You guys, I think you mentioned Paul Dini. Did you mention that, or you did? It was something alliance, or it was like Joss Whedon, or something like that.
I think it was Joss Whedon.
It was Joss Whedon.
And maybe that was when you were doing your town,
what was Old it? Town,
Old Town.
Yeah,
you were doing your Old Town series, and I really dug those, and I was like, this is someone I want to work with.
And then that's how we first started to get together, and then, you know, like, I mean, that's like several years ago. We're still making films.
Yeah.
How does that even feel at that point? Is it even real to you that we're like, oh crap, we're in the industry? I don't even know if there's a backup plan. I feel like I have no backup plan.
There's no backup plan. No, it was weird because with Project Res, like, Project Res was a very important part of me becoming a filmmaker, because the key to really becoming a filmmaker is not just making the films, but showing your work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very important.
And also getting people to see your work.
Exactly.
You
know?
Yeah, it's
exactly.
Like, you think that you're done, like, oh, phew, I just hit cut, man. It's the end. We wrapped. And like, you think that you're done. No way. You're only like halfway done.
No.
You have
no,
to get people to see your movie.
You have to get people to see your movie. And to have an outlet every month where you would have an audience of, 100 people, maybe more, like 100 to 200 people.
I felt like we pretty much packed that place as much as we can.
Yeah,
like
it was
on
at the
season.
Firehouse Theater.
Yeah.
It was, I honestly never remember seeing an empty seat. If anything, yeah,
I remember
bringing empty seats. And also, remember when we did it at like that one art room,
like,
or
Studio
whatever?
Studio 208, like in the basement or something?
Yeah, it was in the basement.
Those are early
ones,
man.
It was like folding chairs, and it was like this creepy looking basement that looked like spiders were down there or some other, like, dead bodies. I don't know. It was strange. But I remember like having the folding chairs with, I don't know how many could fit back there. Not as much as the Firehouse Theater, but basically just a creepy, dingy basement, like, setting up, watching some movies.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a great experience just to show and get feedback, and so for me, and I took it as I went 7 months where I would just make a film every month, and that was the beginnings of my film schooling, was also, I would just try to make stuff.
And also, it felt good, at least in my perspective, to make stuff, and just because it's weird, like, I feel like in because, like, it's no secret, I've made a lot of films. I've been part of the production of many, many films, commercials, whatever right now. And I've sort of really focused on my writing in comic book form. And it's been a while since I've made my own film. But I feel like now it's like, you know, it's sort of like this no-pull punches time. I can't go out and make a film that doesn't really matter to me anymore. Yeah. And it feels harder. And I feel like for some reason back then, I was able just to pump them out. And I don't know what it was. It's probably life.
I think for me, because I feel very much the same way. I remember that period of time where I made 7 films in 7 months.
And yeah,
now, like a film a month. For
you
every,
made a
every...
film a month, and then now the last film I made was a year ago. You know
what? Yeah. I think it actually is Project Res. Like, was that light? Was that ignition for all you guys back then? Because you had a due date, and you had knew that there was an audience, like. You'd be like, hey, I'm going to show this night. And you already knew in advance. And also some of the prompts, sometimes it was themed. Sometimes it was open themed. You could do whatever you want. But sometimes there was a crazy theme. Like, I remember one of them was like...
Not nudity or candy corn.
What's his name? The guy from...
Irony or...
Tony Danza. Tony Danza's Extravagant Circus or something was one.
Well, we really tried to get Tony Danza to be on the show.
Yeah, I was like writing, because at that time he had his own TV show. It was like Tony Danza Live in the morning or something. And I actually, like, the Tony Danza show or something, I actually wrote them, but I never heard back. But I was like, man, that would be so awesome. Because they had a segment called Tony Comes to Town. And I was that'd be so awesome if he'd go to Richmond and have a whole festival based off of his name.
That would have been fantastic.
And I used to do the Project Res flyers and put them around town. Like, I used to illustrate the flyers and, like, promote the show. Like, I don't know. And also, it felt like we put a lot of effort into the show, but then it didn't feel like we were, like, drowning in it. We just loved doing it, you know?
It was great.
But, yeah, I feel like that ignited you to make, like you said, 7 movies in 7 months.
Yeah.
But now there's, like, no... Because Project Res is, like, I guess, defunct now. And
oh, there's no Project Res.
So, like, I guess...
The website is still there, though.
Well, the thing was, I guess, no one... there was, like, one other person that was trying to carry the torch, but then that flamed out or something. I don't know. I don't know, because at that point, I had already left Richmond. Joe's already left Richmond. Like, everyone already left the town, so... Yeah. It's basically, like... I feel like you need to have a due date, though. Like, when it comes down to it. Whereas, just, like, if you say, I'm going to do a film... And yeah, maybe you're working on it for the past 3 years. It's in your head. It's already engraved in your brain. Like, you have sparks of ideas. But if you don't have, like, a due date and, like, a set timetable, because I know, like, in films, there's so many components. Like, you have to write the script, maybe do another revision, do several things, casting and this and that. But you should basically, like, in my opinion, break it down of a timeline of, like, when you want to start doing these things. Because otherwise, it's just going to keep floating in your brain. Deadlines make all the difference. Like, even if it's not exactly come out the way you planned it, at least it got done.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was due.
exactly. I think another thing that factored in was, for me, was just the newness of the medium where, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, but it was just like, I was like, I have this idea, grab my friends, let's go shoot it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the more you learn about how to make a good film, you realize, okay, well, maybe I should plan this out a little bit more. Exactly. We should do this. So, like, the quality of the films became, as the quality increased, so did the planning and the pre-production and everything behind it. So it's like the combination of not having, like, the due date and the medium, but also wanting to you know,
just be better.
Be better. Like, and that brings a whole load of issues with it when you're trying to make your film that next level, as opposed to.
Yeah.
Also, one thing that I ran into a whole lot was there became this staple of like, oh, this is a Project Res film.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, in my head, I was like, I don't want this to be. I've always had this big stigmata against, even like when I was in school, having people say like my films are student films, because I was like, I fucking didn't even make it to be just for like the students or just be in class. I meant it to be out in the wild, you know.
Yeah.
And then for people to think like, oh, this is now Project Res film, I was like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? Like, is it like a jokey film? Because like, I remember my films were never like, you know, I never aimed for like anything. I don't even think I even made a comedy. Yeah. They're just sort of just weird black arts comp. I don't even know what. I don't. It was just my style of noir. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess. But then that's what happens when you have so many films. And then you get sort of this impression that people are accustomed to seeing a style of film that, like, the person who wants to make a film, they're like, oh, I want to make a comedy jokey film too. And then it was even, remember Joey Tran, it was like tough for him to break out of like, I need to make a comedy, I need to make a drama. I was like, I dare you to do a drama. Yeah. I remember you one day saying this, you're like, I don't want to, that's the last time I do a drama or something like that. And no, I was like, no, dude, why?
No, because like, I always made, my first couple films were all comedies, and they were... And the thing was, you could hear, and people got used to that for me.
Yeah.
Like, I became known, like, when they saw my film coming up, when they saw I had a film, they go, oh, this is gonna be funny.
But that's what's cool, is that with Project Res, you were able to build a name.
I was, and that was awesome. And then I went, and I went and studied in Oxford for a summer, and I made a film there, called Running, which was a drama.
Yeah.
Like, a very deep drama, and to that point, it was the best film I'd ever made. And I was really excited to show it at Project Res. I was like, I can't wait to show this. Oh, this is gonna be awesome. And I put it in, and it starts playing, and people see that like it's my film. And they're like, oh, this is gonna be funny.
They're expecting to laugh.
And they're expecting to laugh, and then it's like this really, you know, tough drama. They're like, and then they were super critical.
They're like, why wasn't it funny?
So basically, you like funny peopled yourself.
I funny peopled myself. Apparently, yes. It was,
but also the cool thing about Project Res was like seeing all you guys be competitive, but in a good competitive way.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like anyone was trying to step on anybody's toes or get really in, you know, in each other's face or anything like that. But it's almost like, hey, Calvin did a really good movie this week or this month, you know, be like, I'm going to step on my game or something, you know, like it was just that type of thing, like a healthy competitiveness.
Absolutely.
And learning from other people.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where... You know, I would, and for me, I saw that that's exactly what it was like for me. I would see Joe's films, and I'd say that was awesome. That I want to do something like that.
And then I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, that sucked. I need to get do this better.
But I mean, I think the thing, like, the competitive nature was definitely there. And then as a you know, accompaniment to that, you had people starting to work together. Like, you'd see people, it's like, I want to work with that person. I want to work with Joe. I want to work with Cooney. I want to work with Matt West. I want to work with these people that I've made all these films with, and now we're all still friends, and we're all still making stuff together.
Yeah.
And that's the coolest thing.
Well, now I feel like there's a challenge, because back then, I don't know about you, but there was still this, I still felt this, I was hosting the show, and I still didn't feel like oversaturated. But it's funny, like, after that's ended, and that was almost, like, 4 years ago, or more than 4 years ago, or something like that, now I feel, with all this advance of technology, every, like, filmmaking, being a filmmaker is so saturated of people saying they're filmmakers.
Because anyone can buy a camera now.
Yeah, anyone can buy a fucking iPhone and be like, oh, I'm shooting 1080 now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, you're not telling a story, you know what I mean? It's, did you have any feelings on, like, because now we've seen a change. Now with the advance of technology, it's easier, and part of me feels like maybe that's one reason why I'm waiting, because I want to wait for the scarcity of making a film. It's like, you know what I mean? Even though millions of people are making films and series, and I've had many ideas for series, it's almost like since everyone is making, or anyone can claim to be a filmmaker, I want to strike hard.
Yeah.
Like, it was funny how, like, you made the you said that, like, you were like people overly criticized your drama, just because I guess one of it was they're in this awkward phase of like, maybe I should criticize, or I'm not used to it now. I feel like now with like my new work, it's like I severely just want to fuck with the audience. like, it's like even the last time I was talking about, like, with filmmaking on another podcast, they're like, oh, it's supposed to be all nice. And then I was like, well, if you're not challenging anything, then you're just fluff, man. Yeah. And I personally have, I don't know, maybe it's just me still wishing that filmmaking was a dangerous medium. You know what I mean? And I really, me personally, I've had to go rewrite things I did like 3 years ago now because I'm like, well, now that's like, now I wrote like I was a, back then I wrote like I was a pussy. I was like, why didn't I just say chop off his head? Because that's what needed to happen. And I feel like the audience is like that today.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's a tougher world to be a filmmaker or do anything in general?
There is a greater saturation with the expanse of the DSLRs and all of that, where you have access to very good looking images.
Does that take the specialness out of it for you? Because now I feel like it's like, oh, here, son, be a filmmaker, instead of being like, you really, it's almost like this underground, let's be a, how'd you become a filmmaker? That's, well, impossible.
I'd say it's like this. I think there's been, it's almost like what happened when you had the printing press.
Yeah.
And the explosion of being in, or even beyond that, typewriters and word processors, where now everyone and anyone could write a book. But you still got people who are doing bestsellers and who are creating literature.
Yeah.
You've got people who are writing blogs, you've got people who are creating literature. And that's the difference. Like, now that you have all of this technology, it has democratized the medium. And I think that's fine. And you're going to have people who are making stuff that looks, at least to a certain level, looks good. But then there are storytellers and there are artists. Yeah. And there are people, you know, like Christopher Nolan. No one, like, you give some kid a camera on the street, he could make something that maybe for two frames looks like something Christopher Nolan would have shot. But he can't create a masterpiece trilogy, you know? Like,
because he doesn't come from a Christopher Nolan's writing background.
Exactly. Like, it comes down to your perspective and what you're trying to do. Because I think, like, one reason that I was going back is that I wanted to teach and expose kids to filmmaking and filmmaking practices and filmmaking analysis, is because I believe that visual literacy and filmmaking and media, that's the new literacy. Like, that's the new being able to read, is being able to look at something and understand and break it down and know what the structure is and know how to do it. But you're still going to have people who rise above just the basic form of literacy. And that's what I strive for. That's what I'm trying to achieve, is to become an artist, you know, like, to become someone who tells stories at a greater level. So it doesn't matter. Like, I could shoot my film with a 5D or whatever, but because of the story that's being told, that's what differentiates it.
I think that's always what's been really crucial. And I think that's even one of the reasons why, like, I was like, all right, I'm going to focus, like, after Project Res, I was like, I'm going to focus on just being a better storyteller.
Absolutely.
And I was like, that's when I teamed up with Karen. I was like, we got to tell stories.
Yeah.
And I know this is going to help my filmmaking. You know what I mean? And that's, it's specifically, making comics has, you know, in my head and everything, even the way I edit, I was just like, because when you write comics, there's no real like, we can shoot this later and edit it. It's like, you got to be, this is what we need, this is what we need, this is what we need. Look at it. Does that make sense to you? You know what I mean? And then with, you know, that's how it is when you're making a film with editing, you know, it's like, we only have 5 shots, and that's the same thing with comics. So you have this. But there's always that dividing line. It's like, well, it's not just a storyboard. Comics is its own medium. But the storytelling aspect of it, I was able to just branch out and be like, okay, I know I'm ready to tell these type of stories in general.
Absolutely. And then there's also, you have the sense of people who are able to mimic things. Like, they're able to look at a movie and mimic what's going on in that movie and create something that's okay. But then there are people who can understand why the things in that original movie were done the way they were.
Yeah.
And then take that and extrapolate it and make their own thing.
And
that's even more powerful.
And that's usually when I did teach film, that's the first thing I did was try to build the first lesson I did was everyone gets one word, right? Mm-hmm. And I give everyone, like, all right, you have a still camera. Tell me a story with this one word in 32 shots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they all go out and they all go and shoot their sequence with those 32 frames that they have. And then they all come back and they show it, right? And everyone does some completely different. But then at the end of the day, I told him not to tell us what the word is before you tell us the story that involves that word. And then at the end of the segment, I revealed everyone had the same word. So it was sort of like, you guys are, this is the show that, you know, you're all going to tell a story completely different. And there's totally different ways to tell the same exact story.
Exactly.
So there's no excuse to be copying or anything like that. You all have your own vision. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great
There's things you can be like, inspired by, but that doesn't mean you should just straight up rip off. You know, like you can take segment and then maybe like twist it and mold it into something new. So in that way, you are creating new. But I just can't stand it when people just straight up be like, let's copy this.
Yeah.
Come on now.
My thing about filmmaking was that, like, coming from a storyteller aspect, you should know the language of film.
Yeah.
Once you, because it's just like any language, everyone's still going to compose their sentences differently. And then everyone's going to have a certain word that they use that other people don't use. But it's also just like, oh, man, he used a big intelligent word. Or, damn, he used a big profanity to get a point across. It's like, that's the same with film. You can use this language or invent new slang.
Exactly.
You know, that's how it is.
That's really, yeah, absolutely. And in terms of, like, there's copying and then there's paying homage to, and then there's like recontextualizing. One of my favorite examples of this was something that my very first film teacher, who's been mentioned before, Todd Raviota.
Was he your first one?
He was my very first
film teacher. We tried to get him on the podcast, but you know, he doesn't want to leave Richmond.
Oh, we'll have to take the podcast to Richmond then. That's what you got to do. Just set up.
And then we can go to that barbecue place.
Yes.
Exactly.
Make it worth the time.
But he showed a clip of Night of the Hunter.
I remember Night of the Hunter, yeah.
And he has the love and hate tattooed on his knuckles, the preacher does. And he tells the story of love and hate. And then he showed the clip from Do the Right Thing, where Radio Raheem has brass knuckles that say love and hate. And he tells the story of love and hate. But what Spike Lee did was he took that original example, that original clip,
mm-hmm.
and then recontextualized it, modernized it, and put it in a whole different setting so that he's paying homage to the original while bringing like certain context to Do the Right Thing. So he's speaking to the original film. He's creating a dialogue between two pieces of art, which I think is something that is worthwhile when are talking about, you know, using stuff from the past. Like, it's not just straight up like stealing and copying. That's the worst. But when you can create a dialogue between two pieces of art, that's something that I think is really powerful.
It's always good, also, I feel like, as filmmakers, have different inspirations outside of film.
Yes.
That's always been the toughest thing when I did look at other people's films. Is just like, wow, you're just referencing... I mean, it's not against referencing films, but there's so many more also storytelling aspects of drawing from your real life or drawing from, like, hey, you make music. There's ways of learning aspects of that and putting it into your movies.
Yeah.
That's a main thing I always tell people. They're like, oh, so what movie should I watch? I was like, don't worry about movies, man.
Yeah.
Learn the language.
No, like, remember when, I mean, when I was coming through film school in the original era of Project Res, it was just constant references to Requiem for a Dream. Like, it was just constant references.
Still haven't seen it.
You still haven't seen it? No. If you've seen enough student films, then you've seen Requiem for a Dream.
I probably have seen, like inspirations of...
Yes, pieced together.
I always think that maybe I've just had this against-the-grain mentality of my films all the time. It's because, like, back then, it was almost like, when I was going through film school, it's like, everyone's talking about committing suicide. Yeah. Everyone's like ADD. Everyone's like really dark or something like that. And I was like, man, am I the only person here who I mean, I'm not saying that I'm the greatest filmmaker or anything like that, but I realized, like, I don't want to be like their stuff, and I need to draw from what I am. You know, even Robert Rodriguez, it's like, you got to draw from what you know. And he was like, I have a turtle and I have a guitar. Let's make a whole story about that.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, well, I love comics. I love wrestling. Let's blend them together somehow.
I mean, that's what, like, my...
That would be Nacho Libre. But I never saw that either. But I don't know. For some reason, it looks kind of horrible.
It is horrible.
I never saw it.
That's what the wrestler is, what we're talking about.
Jack Black's pretty awesome. Well, yeah, the wrestler is pretty awesome.
But yeah, that's important too.
Yeah.
Now I feel like, do you still find yourself like, I don't know, there's something about, I watch less film, but I just watch maybe because I've already seen all the shit that I need to see. I don't know what it is. But it's like it's weird in that aspect where I just like really want to just watch like the best ones that are out there. I remember Kevin Smith talking about this on his podcast when he was talking with Smodcast with Scott Mosier, saying like back in the day he used to be able to watch like 3 hour long like David Cronenberg or something like that, like long ass indie films, and be like, I love it. Now he's like, I guess in his older state, I'm not saying that I'm older, but now he's like, man, but you know, I don't really need to. It just needs to be super good now. Is that how you are now these days too, or are you just really just wanting to absorb as much as possible?
I find myself wanting to. I think I'm more along the lines of wanting to absorb as much as possible. I just love movies.
Yeah.
You know, I can generally find something.
If there's a bad movie, are you going to turn it off or are you going to keep watching?
It depends on how bad.
Because I feel like
the type of bad it is. Like,
there came a point with me where it was sort of like, I'm in the movie theater or I rented something and I'm just like, this sucks. Like, it's really become economical for me. I'm like, I don't want to waste my money.
I don't have a lot of that.
Yeah. So I'm just like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? I don't want to waste my money going to theater. You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
I don't know. I just, like, people get on me because I have guilty pleasures, I guess.
What's that? What are your guilty pleasure movies?
My guilty pleasure movies. I'll tell you one.
It's not Clueless. Clueless is awesome.
No. Step Up to the Streets.
What? What?
I'm just laughing.
I really enjoy that movie.
The Streets?
Yes.
I don't even know the plot of that, but it has to be on the streets.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's my thing about dance movies, right? People always get down on dance movies. They're basically martial arts movies, if you think about it.
Oh, they definitely are.
A well-done dance movie, it's the same plot in the dance movie. We have to win this competition to make the money to save our school. That's it.
To save our school.
No, I mean, that's pretty much every dance movie. Or we have to win this competition to make money to pay for this surgery or something.
Is that each one of the step-ups?
It's almost every dance movie I've ever seen.
It's just like a fundraising thing.
Yeah, it's basically a fundraising thing. Just like almost every martial arts movie is, this person killed this person that I love.
Revenge.
So now I'm going to get revenge.
And money for the school.
Or I'm going money to save the dojo. Or these people are coming to take over this town, so I'm going to fight them all.
Yeah.
And dance movies are now really well shot, and they're very athletic.
In 3D too, man.
In 3D. And they're interesting moves and good music.
There's so many.
Interesting that you say the dance movies, because actually in my history of film class, like one of the first films that they showed was they're starting off chronologically, like, you know, when film and image like still came together.
Yeah.
And black and white dance numbers were like one of the first things.
Yeah.
It was like no sound, right? So it's just like seeing people dance was something that people wanted to watch.
Yeah.
Because there's movement.
Yeah.
You know, they were like going to the theater for the first time and be like, wow, there's moving going on. People are dancing. So it's funny that now, like, you're right. People are down on dance movies. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When you first said Step Up 2, I was just laughed. Because I'm like, really, dude? But like, it is interesting, like, when you bring it back to like the history of cinema, those are one of the first things that people wanted to watch.
Exactly. And I'm not saying Step Up to the Streets deserves an Academy Award.
I mean,
it's your guilty pleasure. It's a worthwhile way to spend a Saturday afternoon. It comes on TNT like all the time. You just put it on and do chores. Like, you know, it's like this.
I like that though. I like that aspect of it. Yeah. I mean, like, really, that's what really bothers me sometimes when people are like, oh, what do you think is the 10 best movies and stuff like that? And that's a tough question to ask, because at the end of
it's just like a blog question, all these top 10 lists.
It is, but it's also like, well, I can't name you the best movie, but I can tell you the top that I like.
Yeah.
You mean, because best, I'm not the freaking messiah of what is the best.
But when after a while, it like depends on your mood.
Yeah.
Like, what if you're in like a, you know, Igor mood or whatever. What's his name? Eeyore.
What is it? Igor mood?
No, like an Eeyore. You know, you're kind of like, oh, well, you know. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You might be like, oh, I like Welcome from a Dream, or what's it? Requiem for a Dream or something. You know, like, yeah. I've never even seen that film. But, I mean, I'm sure people have, like, their top, because they're like, this is, you know, I love this movie.
All the time.
But then as far as, like, a random play movie that you own, but like it might not be on your list type thing. Like, it just depends on your mood. If you're in a super happy mood, like, you might be like, yeah, Step Up 2, I love it. But yeah, you know, like,
well, here's the thing. One thing you may or may not know about me, listeners, Cotton Jr. loves to dance. all the time. Oh, man. So that's part of the thing. See? I just enjoy
it's a general dancing. Interest.
It's a general interest of mine. So that's I think that factors in as well a little bit.
We did talk about on the podcast like way back in the day, how like I think you had a story when you were still living like an American, how like maybe you had not a roommate or you just knew someone that like when they're having sex or something like that in the room, they were playing like the Kanye West song.
Oh my God. I remember that story.
I don't know if you ever told me that. I don't remember if I already told you that we talked about. Do you remember
so
talking
many
about?
Years
they
ago.
Played that on like the Love Lockdown. Like that's all you can hear being played in this style. That's what I was like. We had such a big conversation about like how
it started just with just talking about Kanye West.
That's
and then it led yeah. to like
that's like 2 years ago too.
Yeah,
it was longer than that. It was maybe 5 years ago.
But I remember now that I look at your posts on Facebook and it's always around like with the Grammy Award time. What is the one thing that you always post? There's something that you always say or someone one of your friends always says about like the Grammys whenever they get people are being they show the nominations. Don't you usually have something? I forget what that is.
My good friend Steve is a huge Drake fan, so every year
is this King? Was there something?
No. This isn't Steve from King.
Is this Stephen King? I remember there's always a time when we were making movies up here. I was like, is this Steve? Is this Steve? Is this Steve from King? Because so is this one dude from King, and you had so many friends named Steve.
For those of you listening, King was one of my first films, and it was about a child prodigy lawyer. And often I would like introduce my friends as like, this is my friend Carlton.
Yeah.
Like, and Joe would be like, is this Carlton from King? Because I would cast all of my friends in my movies. But no, Steve is a huge Drake fan. So like whenever they announce the Grammys, he's always calling me. Like I can just count on it like clockwork. Like he will call me and start discussing like what the... like what the nominations were, what the nominations
did
should
he believe
have
been. Drake need to be nominated? Is that what?
Yes, he thinks that Drake should be like retroactively nominated for every Grammy ever.
Now tell
the
me
biggest
this.
Drake fan
tell me this.
Met.
What is so great about Drake? I've never been able to be like, oh, Drake is awesome because I saw him live on like a VMA or something like that, and I was like, ah, oh, what's so good about this Drake guy?
Sell us
Drake.
I'm the wrong person. I'm not Steve.
I wasn't sure if you're a fan of Drake or not.
No, Stephen I am. King. No, I am a fan of Drake. I think he's a very talented artist. I think he's versatile. I think he does a good job.
What does
job.
That mean?
Like as a hip hop artist, like he sings as well.
Does
like,
he?
Yeah, he does.
I've never even seen him sing or heard him sing.
He sings. He just has like a different flow that's different from a lot of other artists, and the things that he talks about and the way he talks about them are different, unique. Like there are very few people like Drake, I guess. So, and he's good at it. He's a good lyricist and all that. So like I enjoy his music. He's one of my favorite artists, but he's not. We really need to get Steve in here. Sometimes I troll him. I'll just.
So what does he say about the like? He's just like Drake needs to be nominated for all this stuff.
He'll just break down. He's like, all right, so who got nominated for best rap album? I've heard this one. I haven't heard this one, but then Drake's still gonna win. Like, I was just like, all right, whatever.
He's just
a diehard Drake fan.
So like we just had like the Oscar nominations come out. Have you seen all those movies and did you agree with all those things that are coming out?
I haven't seen all of the movies. I do agree with a lot of the nominations. I think Lincoln.
You worked on Lincoln. Is that a little bit of biasness there?
Full disclosure, I did work on Lincoln.
Were you on? I didn't look. Were you on screen credited?
I was on screen credited on Lincoln.
Nice. Because there were so many people that were just like, whoa, where's my name?
I know.
I understand really that, though. I understand because look at them now. They're not part of the Oscar. Possibly award winning.
Exactly. It's
you could be an Oscar award winner.
I could be an Oscar award
I should just
winner.
List you. I should list you possible Oscar award winner.
Oscar nominee.
Oscar nominee. Yeah.
You can list me as Oscar nominee. I'm an Oscar nominated production assistant.
Are we allowed to say what department you were part of? Or
yeah, I was a production assistant. I worked in the office.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so between a little bit of everything. I was just all over the place.
Fun experience.
So I did some on set stuff. Some yeah, it was a great experience.
Because I'm assuming that production had shit together because of you guys,
because of us, because of the crackpot. Was that right?
Crack pipe? No, not crack pipe.
Not because of crack pipe. The crackerjack. I don't know. The great team of
people. You had your stuff together.
Yes. Yes, the machine. The machine. Deadly machine.
We were a machine.
Part of underneath the what team produced that? Was that DreamWorks? That was DreamWorks. Under the DreamWorks Steven Spielberg team.
Yes.
You guys are the reason.
We are.
Reason
we are,
for the season.
We are the reason it went off without a hitch.
That's right.
It's great.
Forgot what we're talking about. We're just excited that you were Oscar nominated.
You know what I want to hear about? You said that you're into dance. I want to know about like what type of dance you like and all your moves.
I like
and you're
my
pretty.
Moves.
You're a pretty tall guy, so I feel
I
like
am a tall
you.
Guy.
Cause I remember when we filmed. Remember when we filmed Girl Talk for RVA House Show?
Yes.
And then there's that big wide shot, and then above that we see you with the camera just towering over everyone. I was like, he got the shot, dude.
Yeah.
It was like 40 minutes of just shooting like people dancing.
Just
and then you were
crazy.
Dancing with.
I was dancing too. I had to hand the camera off, and I started dancing in the middle of the thing. No, I don't know. I don't know. I was just talking about this the other day. I don't know at what point I became a quote-unquote dancer because I just love going out and dancing. And my friends say just wind them up and watch them go because like I'll just be – if I'm at a bar, it doesn't even have to be like a dance bar. If I'm at a bar and a song comes on I like, I'll just start like moving at the bar.
Yeah.
And people will be like, what is he doing? And
are they saying what is he doing as in like your moves are undescribable, or are they saying what is he doing because they're like you're not supposed to be dancing now, this is like a
yeah I think it's just Subway. Like, exactly. I mean I dance like at the gym, I dance between sets at the gym, I'll dance anywhere.
What are your go-to moves?
What are my go-to moves? I don't know. I have like a this is a podcast. I mean, I could demonstrate,
yeah.
But like,
I guess like try to vocalize.
That's right. How about I could demonstrate because this is actually a pretty good song. I could actually kind of dance to going on. All
right.
I could
well, how about you demonstrate?
It's gonna be tough. How am I gonna?
And then we'll do like color commentary.
And then you could do color. You could try to describe.
I'm not gonna say no, but I'll feel weird being like now he's dancing by himself. He's thrusting his pelvis in the sky. Rotating the shoulder mounts.
That's pretty much like
you're gonna have to keep your headphones on because they have no music.
I know. I'm keeping the headphones on. Like this is kind of like this is what I'll do generally at the bar. It's
what do I call that?
It's like a sway.
It's a rock, a side by side.
I do a lot of like arm stuff, so I'll hit the.
See, that's crazy.
A power fist move.
See, what's crazy is that you're like what, like 6'4", 6'2", or something like that.
I'm like 6'5".
You're like 6'5", so that makes your wingspan pretty. Pretty long.
Exactly.
So when you raise up the arms, that's a wingspan.
I'm like a pterodactyl in the club.
That's what it is. There's a pterodactyl in the club.
There's a pterodactyl in the club.
That's when you point. If you point out your hair in the back.
I pull the hair out. That's just like, that's how
actually,
I
like that nickname better than Cotton.
The pterodactyl. He's a pterodactyl.
I'm down with that. I think we should call this episode Pterodactyl in the Club.
The attack of the pterodactyl.
That's how I get down.
That's really cool. I'm not a club or a water person. I like starting the party, but you know, I just bob my head or whatever. I don't know what I do.
Yeah.
But that's good to dance. Like, gets the heart flow moving. That means you have good cardio going.
That's exactly what it is. Like, when I was in... I danced a lot when I lived in Prague, and I would go out pretty much every night.
Maybe that's where it started. Was it there?
That may have been where it started.
Because there's a better dance scene outside.
There's a great dance scene in Prague.
You're just like, fuck it, I'm going to start dancing.
Yeah. And
I feel like dancing right now. That's how they do
it. That's what it was. And there was a lot of beer to be had. So, of course, after a lot of beer, you just want to dance. I don't know if that... But, yeah, I mean, that's... I just like dancing, man, so...
And then it cuts... And it happens
it
naturally.
Happens. It happens naturally.
Have you ever been part of a dance off in a club? Is that do those even happen?
They do happen. So here
I don't go to clubs, so I don't know.
They do happen. I was a part of a dance off in a club in Prague, and I beat him.
How do you know when they?
Did they give
victorious?
You a trophy and stuff?
I did not get a trophy.
As in women's. You got the women's.
I got the women folks.
Yeah, I got the
ladies.
You got trophy girls.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So, but no, it was, I don't generally do dance offs though. I'm more of like a,
but
let's all dance together.
How did
type
it start?
Dance.
What do you, like line dance? Like,
well, no, I'm just saying like I want to get the party started. I want everyone to have a good time. Like, yeah. I don't need to, you know.
Dance by your, so when you had a dance off.
Yeah.
Was it like a challenge was thrown down to you? Like someone just, a dude bumped, was it a dude?
Well, it was a guy. Like I was just.
I've never seen dance offs before.
A girl versus. I've seen those.
I did
before.
On a Justin Bieber music video. Baby.
Was that a girl and guy dance off?
Yeah, they were in a bowling alley and they had dance off.
Oh, nice.
It was like the girls, and then all the girls got on the girls' team. They were like, yeah, we support you, girlfriend. And then all the guys got on the guys' side, and it was kind of like a battle of sexes for a little bit.
See, that's what's happening, nice. Calvin, is that like all these, since we're like, we're trying to get these younger artists to do, we're trying to get to do their music videos.
Yeah.
And they're looking at the demographic age. I'm like, well, that's sort of the Justin Bieber, Hillary Duff age. So now we got to research their videos and see how they do it. So I'm like, holy crap. I'm really referencing like Hillary Duff and Justin Bieber to be like, oh yeah, so they did a
but
dance
you know
off
what?
In,
that
in
baby
a bowling
video,
alley.
The baby video was awesome because it was like shot at the Universal City Walk.
Yeah.
So that I don't know. I liked it. I liked all the lights and stuff. I think it had some good vibrant youth.
Yeah.
It's good.
So that's what's had to happen. It's sort of just like, wow, this is what the kids are into. It's like, it's really like you just take a Dr. Dre video and you kiddie it up.
That's exactly what it is.
That's like now they're in a lunchroom as opposed to a strip club. You know what I mean?
And then people are just throwing money.
They still
money.
Just dance on the tables. It's too much
stuff
like that.
They're just going to throw money on the lunchroom, make it rain.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Literally
or no,
like,
what it is.
Like lettuce, you know, it's green.
Throwing ketchup packets.
Yeah. Or like they're giving each other, instead of condoms, now they all have fries or something like that.
Oh, put that on me. No way.
No, you don't like handing it out in a Dr. Dre video that's like, here, take these fries. They're just as good.
Don't answer.
Oh, man.
There's always good times to that stuff. Yeah, so that's... It's weird where you get inspiration from, man.
It is weird where you get inspiration from.
Are you excited about your move to New York?
I am excited about my move to New York. I think it'll be.
And also, you're gonna be in Jersey as well, right?
I'm gonna be. I'll be in Jersey / New York.
So you're gonna have that both. Sometimes people think they're almost just, like there's that fine line, but I feel like you know.
You're also, overlapping.
Yeah,
you're it's in two territories.
I feel like it's always been. Sort of that mix, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm really excited. I think
you're gonna cross water either way.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. A lot of water crossing is happening. But just you know, it's one thing that like Richmond is great for, but that I'm also
sometimes you gotta
looking
branch
forward
out,
to.
Man.
Yeah, it's just like the art, like just being surrounded by artists who are doing stuff and just being finding inspiration in random spots. The last time I was in New York, I just saw they're just random art installations just that people have done just on the streets.
Yeah.
That you're just like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like just stuff that you come across all the time. And, you know, I've been in Hampton, Virginia for the past couple of months and it's just been like, you just don't come across that as much.
Yeah.
It's a lot of shopping malls and stuff, which is cool in its own way, you know, but, you know, just kind of being surrounded by a living, breathing city is something that I think I'm definitely looking forward to.
And also, you've already done the Richmond thing anyway.
I've done the Richmond thing.
For, like, your whole life.
For my whole life. You know, I want
to... You deserve to be out of that place.
My goal is to... I still want to make movies in Richmond.
Yeah.
And about Richmond.
Yeah. You always can.
Yeah.
You always can.
And I can always come back. But, you know, for the time being, I kind of want to stay and live in New York. Because I think just... For where I am right now, it's the inspiration, like you said, just finding that inspiration and being surrounded by those people will be very important.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, New York Comic Con is always there. That's always...
New York Comic Con.
Have you ever been to New York Comic Con yet?
I haven't. I was supposed to go this past year, but...
It's
an
annihilation of humanity. It's just, like, so many people... loving the same things that you'd love too, man.
That sounds awesome.
And Asbury Park.
There's always those conventions. So maybe we might...
Yeah.
That's... I mean, we visit those spots all the time now.
Yeah.
So that's just...
No, we'll definitely make some things happen.
We'll definitely... We're making stuff happen anyway. That's just...
That's true.
The nature of our... I don't even know how it happened that we produced several of our stuff together. We just sort of like, hey, let's do this. All right, let's go.
Yeah. I mean,
we still had that film idea about us being asshole directors.
We do.
That'll happen in the future.
Series.
What will happen? Will that just become reality?
That's true.
And people will document us.
We'll just hire someone to follow us around.
But we won't. What will happen is we won't like tell each other that we're doing it. Just all of a sudden there'll be a camera that follows us around, and then no one would like. But we wouldn't admit that it's us filming each other.
But we hire like different people. So you hire one team and I hire another team. And they're making like two different, completely different kinds of shows.
This becomes like a political slander on each other.
Exactly. It'll be great.
That's really how our ideas start. It starts with us being assholes, and then we're like, oh, what about this other idea?
Exactly.
And it branches out to like, oh yeah, don't remember when we were assholes?
Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly.
Thanks for being on the show, man.
Absolutely. It was a blast.
It's like, you know, I don't know how long it's been since we asked or tried to get you on the show, but now you are on.
I'm
on.
It's official. Nice
official.
And you've already, in this span of an hour, you already had two nicknames.
I've had two new nicknames.
Two new, Cotton and
Pterodactyl.
Pterodactyl.
We start with you just having one name, and then all then
no,
two
no,
names.
No, he had
three.
Two names.
I
now
two
he
names,
has four names.
And now I have four names. It's growing exponentially.
Well, thanks for being on the show, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Everyone at home, don't forget to check out astrayproductions.com, goastray.com. Well, don't do it, goastray.tumblr.com, curls-studio.com, curls-curls for Carolyn's comic strip curls. Thanks for being on the show, Calvin.
Glad to be here.
See you later,
Carolyn.
Has
his arms spread out pterodactyl style. Adios, everybody.
See you, everybody.